Welcome to episode one of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your host, L. Ariel, and we are at musicjobspodcast.com. So welcome. I'm so glad you could join us. Indeed, this is the first episode, episode one. So we're really happy. And by we, I mean me. I'm the only one here. But I'm actually going to be interviewing a number of insanely talented and creative and clever and funny people that are from all aspects of the music industry. So what the hell is this podcast going to be about? That's a very good question. It's ostensibly, there's a big word, about careers in the music industry, but I think I should break that down for everyone a little bit. What I want to do is highlight all the numerous and varied careers in the industry today, as well as career trajectories of so many talented individuals whose common thread is usually a love of music. So we're not just going to be interviewing the singer-songwriters, the session players, the musicians, the DJs, but we're also going to be interviewing the managers, the marketers, the promoters, the lawyers, the music supervisors, all the people working in all the different cogs that make up what is this machine of the music industry. It's an exciting and unpredictable time for music. As everybody knows, changes are happening almost daily, so knowledge is power. And I think you'll start to see, as I have, that there are many, many different paths to success. That a key part, I think, of success is a wearing of many hats, being willing to try new things, to stay outside the box, maybe go in a different direction. And lastly, I want this podcast to be inspirational and I want it to be empowering. I want everyone to know that everyone I interview here and beyond began their career in the same way. They had to start. And they had to build. They had to take risks and make some hard choices. So I hope that you can take home from this some good ideas, some good advice. And if you are just starting out or hell, just want to do something different, I think you will gain some very helpful knowledge and some hella powerful motivation. My first guest is the perfect person to kick off this podcast, Marvin Villacuna. He has not had the typical career trajectory of someone in the music industry, and that's why he's so great to kick this off. He is a veteran film producer. He's an experiential marketer with clients such as iTunes, BMW, and Perrier. He's done work with the Grammys, the Oscars. He's produced content for television, film, and publications. He is the co-creator and executive producer of Platinum Hit on Bravo, a reality songwriting competition series featuring Jewel and Cara DiGiardio. And he is the partner and manager of Chloe Temchin Entertainment. I urge you, if you have not heard of Chloe Temchin, to check her out. Her story is just incredible. Let me give you the spelling for her website, CHLOETEMTCHINE.com. I'm just going to play a clip of part of her beautiful song called Breathe, and then we'll kick off the interview.
Sometimes you fall apart to find your strength. Baby steps against all odds until you rise again. Everything is crashing down, still I'm standing on my feet. Sometimes you have to lose your breath to breathe.
Hi, Marvin. Thank you so much for joining our podcast. Hey, how'd you get that music job? I'm really thrilled to have you here. Such a pleasure. And I'm wondering if we can just jump right in here and you can tell me a little bit about, you know, sort of like your first memories of music or how you felt, you know, when did music really start to kind of impact your life in a way that you were like, hey, I really like that song, or, you know, a melody you remember as a child or something like that.
Well, first and foremost, thank you for having me as your guest. I appreciate the invitation, and my hope and intention is that whatever I share can be of value to those that are listening. With regards to your first question, I would simply say, I think for me, Michael Jackson is what comes to mind when I think of music. And I was absolutely enamored with Michael Jackson. In fact, my very first, what I would like to think of as my very first entrepreneurial self-created position is I started selling buttons with Michael Jackson images to my classmates.
That's awesome. I
would go to the local flea market and pick up buttons and come back to school wearing them, if you will, as my ads and my billboards, and began selling those to my classmates. And this began very early, but I was able to accumulate sufficient capital to eventually get my own little machine to make the pins myself, which was great because it, of course, added greater profit potential for me. And so that was, you know, when I think of music, I immediately think of my very first entrepreneurial, self-created position, which, of course, only lasted through, you know, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And then, of course, I went on to high school.
That's great. Now, did you ever learn an instrument? Did you ever have any sort of musical training or anything like that? Did you ever have an interest to learn an instrument?
You know, I started playing the piano. I started taking lessons, if you will, and I certainly enjoyed it and loved it. But candidly, you know, my fingers hurt too much, and it just wasn't that much of a drive for me to become this great guitarist. I think it was something my father and mother thought it would be fun for me to do. And I did, but I didn't, you know, follow through with it. And more recently, I started learning the piano, and that was really more out of just, I thought it would be fun. I had no interest in learning piano theory. I was only interested in learning songs that I liked. And I can say that I'm pretty good at playing Imagine, but that's about the extent of it at this stage.
That's pretty good, you know? You got to start somewhere. That's great. Did you, when you were a teenager, like, what were your favorite, you know, obviously Michael Jackson was a big influence. What were your favorite bands as you were a teenager? Like, what kind of music did you gravitate towards?
Gosh, you know, I think, like in my life, which is I have a vast network of individuals that populate completely different industries, different cultures, and different worlds. I think it was the same with music. I don't know that I had a, you know, specific kind that I absolutely loved, but I will say I loved going to live music. So, you know, I've seen Bon Jovi, and I've seen Janet Jackson, and I went to a Michael Jackson concert, and I went to New Edition, and I also went to go see, you know, Motley Crue, and, you know, so I saw, and I love jazz. Jazz is arguably my favorite type of live music, so I've seen a lot of jazz and festivals. You know, I mean, this past summer alone, I went to go see Sia. I went to go see, you know, Chance the Rapper. I went to go see Sting. I went to go see, you know, Peter Gabriel and Radiohead. So it's not necessarily a specific genre, but just I love live music, and I think any opportunity I get to go listen, I'm there.
What can you expand a little bit on that? Like, what do you think it is about live music versus listening, you know, to the CD or whatever, you know, with a great set of headphones or speakers? Like, what is it about seeing a musician and entertainer performing live that really was like magical for you? I know for me, like seeing Prince, when I saw Prince live, I was like, it was like a spiritual experience. You know, it was very powerful. And I'm just wondering if you had kind of that experience or like what it was.
Well, I think I would say that for me, at the core of who I am and ultimately what has helped me build a professional career that's now spanned 20 plus years is I love connection. And I think that any opportunity I have to be in an environment in which I can share an experience, that to me is honestly the greatest thing I can do. You know, when I think about the way I allocate my disposable income, my income is not in the accumulation or collection of material goods, but it's generally and genuinely the development of experiences. So I think for me, it's being in a room with people connecting and being moved and being inspired and that's what does it for me. Period.
That's great. Well, why don't we pivot into kind of your trajectory? So, you know, in terms of marketing, did you go to college? You know, did you get a marketing degree in college, or like, what was that? How did that kind of start out? And if you can kind of guide us on that trajectory a little bit.
Sure. I did actually attend college with two interests. One was finance, and the other one was marketing. The finance was really more for my family, and the marketing was really more for me.
Your family wanted you to do finance?
Yeah. So, well, let me clarify that. So, I'm the eldest son of an immigrant family. My parents moved here from Guatemala. We literally navigated Mexico through Texas and landed in Providence, Rhode Island, which were my formative years. And having been immigrants that did not know people in the U.S. and, more importantly, did not have, you know, the means, if you will, my family was really, really committed to the idea that I learn and understand how to care for myself, build a business for myself. And so they were really adamant that, and when I say adamant, I say adamant in the sense that they really wanted me to succeed and have this financial stability in my life and the financial opportunities in my life. And of course, they thought going to college, getting an education in finance would be a great resource. They wanted me to be happy. That was at the core of what they wanted. But they also felt that my happiness would be best served if I didn't have to struggle financially in my life the way they did over the course of theirs. While I was studying, you know, marketing was something that always intrigued me, predominantly because I'm a creative person. I love creative people. You know, I love movies. I love television. And being the son of an immigrant family that didn't have a lot of means, the babysitter really did become the television. In fact, my very first job that I basically battered the manager about was working at a local mom and pop video store called Pop and Go Video.
Oh, that's great.
I was willing to work any shift, every shift. And, you know, that kind of became a place that I fell in love with, the ability to create. And that's what drove me to figure out how I could be a part of the marketing process. At the time, I didn't realize, or I could not see at the time, a pathway to move into a world of entertainment. But I thought if I could be a part of the entertainment packaging or marketing, I would obviously love that. It turned out that while I was in school, I had met with a social advisor, one of your, you know, academic advisors, and I said that I had a very specific intention and goal that when I left college, I wanted to have all of the, you know, markings that would be appealing and attractive to a major corporation. And she had recommended that I begin interning at any company that did marketing and work my way up through college so that by the time I graduated, I would have not only the experience, but I'd have relationships. It turned out that I found my way to a company called Vector Marketing Corporation, which was the marketing arm of another company called Alcoa, which produced a product called Cutco Knives. And I'd have to say Cutco Knives was basically the turning point in my life. It gave me the skills and the confidence to understand that marketing and sales were the critical and most essential elements of any business. I was fortunate and blessed enough to become quite successful within the vector marketing structure. I moved from, you know, representative all the way through to field representative, all the way through to a manager with my own team. And, you know, being a freshman in college and generating quite a bit of revenue and running an office of, in some cases, 40 to 50 sales representatives with two assistants and two secretaries, it just built confidence in what I was capable of and what I could do. And then at that point, I made the decision that I was really going to go for it. And I decided to close up my shop, if you will, my business, relocate to Los Angeles, attend UCLA, and pursue my real aspiration, which was to create content and to market it. And I, at that point, I had felt pretty confident that I demonstrated to my family that not only did I know how to make money, but I knew how to make a lot of it. And that that was what kind of set the platform for me to have the freedom to now go and start from scratch. I mean, I didn't know anyone when I moved to Los Angeles. So I kind of had a, you know, an opportunity to recreate myself, if you will.
Okay. I'm wondering if I love this idea, though, too. It's not an idea. It's really a fact. But this idea that, you know, marketing, it sounds like you kind of have to be an artist. You have to create and be creative in marketing to really be successful. And I'm wondering if you can speak a little bit on that.
Sure. I mean, I think that, you know, listen, over the course of the last 20 plus years since arriving in Los Angeles, I mean, I think the one thing that I like to feel I had quite a great advantage above and beyond really most of the people I encountered was not only did I have an interest and an appetite to be creative, but I also had an interest and appetite to run a successful business that was creative. And I think that in most cases, individuals forget that they're operating their own business. And, you know, when you're your own business, you are the janitor, you are the head of marketing, you are the head of sales, you are the head of customer service, you are the head of research and development, and not just the creative process. And I think, you know, because I was able to recognize that from a very early point, and again, a lot due to vector marketing, when I arrived here, I was able to look at what I was interested in and then develop a strategy to attract it to myself. And then once I was there, use my creativity and my skill set to figure out how can I move this to the next level? What can I do with this idea? How can I serve a market that exists?
That's great. And I think it will help a lot of musicians that listen to this hear that, because I think sometimes it sort of becomes this fight between, you know, left brain, right brain, and, you know, I'm an artist, man. I just want to focus on creating my music, and that's it, and you know, ignore sort of any sort of business or marketing or that type of thing. And I love what you're saying, because it's like, no, there's plenty of creativity in the marketing and the business aspect. Obviously, you know, there's certain things, you know, that you have to, you know, dot the I's and cross the T's type of thing, but it's just as creative and it's just as necessary, you know, especially
in
this day and age.
Well, yeah. I think it's even more important in this day and age. And I think, you know, the truth of the matter is unless you're able to market yourself, you're really unaware of how to attract someone who knows how to market you. And the truth is that you don't have to be the person that does it for the rest of your life, but you have to be the person that does it initially. And, you know, I think that the easiest example I can give, truthfully, is a product that you buy in a store. If you ever go to a grocery store, occasionally you will see there are people kind of giving samples. That is obviously, you know, a marketing element to help people be introduced to the product. In some cases, and by the way, I happen to know a brand that currently, it's the owner. You know, the owner is the one, you know, literally at one grocery store after the other making the introduction to his product. His intention, of course, is to eventually have a couple of sales reps do it so he can focus on other things. But he knows that if he doesn't have the resources, but he has the product, he has to get out there and do it himself. And, you know, when he arrives, he doesn't just arrive with the product. He arrives with the marketing collateral that is necessary, and more importantly, that shows the stores how to effectively market the product. So I think if there's anything a listener can kind of take away from everything I will say at the end of today, and that is, I think you got to come up with a story, and then you got to be able to communicate that story to someone else who can tell it.
That's great. That's great. So let's go back to you arrive in Los Angeles, you don't know a soul, and you're hitting the ground running. So what happened?
Well, you know, on my way to Los Angeles, I decided to drive cross country because I thought I would not have that experience again in my lifetime. So I took quite a bit of time and traveled from one city to the next. And I was not interested in doing it in 2 days or 3 days. I really wanted to go see the country. And it turned out that in one of those little cities that I had never visited until that moment, while I was sitting in a hotel room, a documentary popped on to HBO. And the documentary was about a guy named Roger Corman. Roger Corman at the time is, and still is, and recently honored by the Oscars, really is the father of independent cinema. And in this interview, there was all of these people being paraded around his success and what he had done and what he had taught them. And in that moment, I thought, well, that's what I've got to work for. And so when I arrived in Los Angeles, I had one intention, and that was, how do I get to work for Roger Corman?
Wow.
And I spent about 60 days trying to figure it out because, you know, at the time we didn't have IMDb. It wasn't like I could go onto a social media channel and figure it out. So I really had to kind of think about how I would do this. And I tried everything. And it just turned out that I was invited to a Thanksgiving dinner because my professor at the time had learned that I had no one to celebrate Thanksgiving with. And as he stated to me, he just couldn't live with himself knowing that. So he invited me to his Thanksgiving dinner, and it turned out on the wall of his home was a movie poster of a picture he had done with Roger Corman.
Wow.
And so he gave me the contact information, said that I could say that I was a student of his, but obviously he had not worked with me, so he couldn't recommend me at that stage. We were too early in our relationship. But all I needed was how to get to his office. I arrived and introduced myself, thinking that I was going to get an interview with Roger Corman the minute I asked for him at the front desk. It turned out it was Alex, his assistant, who had said they weren't hiring anyone, but that they would keep my resume. And more importantly, Roger was accustomed to only hiring Stanford graduates. I was not graduate. But I made him an offer he couldn't refuse, and the offer was that I'd be willing to work for free. That lit up the office, and I began working that Monday. So I started working for Roger Corman, and about 30 days later, I realized pretty quickly from observing how the operations work that it was an assembly line. The widget was different. It was a movie, but it was purely an assembly line, and I began to break down that assembly line, and within a year's time, I made my first feature film using basically the same assembly line, and in often cases, and in particular this case, I ended up using many of the relationships I'd met at those offices. And so within the first year, I made my first picture, and that kind of launched me into the world of film and television. I began, making these independent productions. I decided that I wanted to learn a different aspects of production, so I began to work for an executive. I learned the side of artist representation, and I worked as an artist representative. And I was able to kind of put all of these pieces together and begin selling concepts and ideas. First and initially from the individuals that I was working with, and thereafter as a individual creator. Once I understood how the business worked, and once I had the various relationships, I was able to put that together which led me to create a television series for Bravo called Platinum Hit. And Platinum Hit was an idea that basically merged American Idol and Project Runway. It pitted singer-songwriters against each other with the intention of becoming the hit maker. And they would win a $100,000 grand prize along with a recording contract with RCA and a publishing deal with the writing group under Sony ATV. And I brought BMI and Sony to the table along with my creative partners. And we sold the show to Bravo, which premiered and starred Jewel as our host, along with Carita Guardia from American Idol. It lasted 10 seasons. And in those 10 seasons, I probably received one of the most incredible educations of how to create and market music, because I was around, you know, at that moment, very successful songwriters who happened to be attractive to huge artists. And so as a result, I got this incredible education in music. But also, and I would have to say my favorite thing that came out of creating this TV series was people began to see me as someone in the music arena, and that resulted in an introduction into a young lady by the name of Chloe Temption. And Chloe and I were to meet to figure out how we could do business together, and maybe I could be helpful in shaping some of her ideas. And, you know, ultimately what began as this lovely introduction turned into an incredible friendship, which led to an incredible romance. And I just loved her as an artist. I loved her as a human being. And I could see that she had all kinds of ideas on how to create music and to put the music out there into the world. But I thought if I could be helpful to her by bringing some of my own talent and my own skills, then I could certainly help elevate that for her. And we built a company together, and she and I became business partners. And over the course of the last, I would say 6.5 years, we have built a very successful business with regards to her as a performer. I mean, at this point in her life, she receives $25,000 an appearance and $40,000 per performance. We did a deal with a brand and sold 100,000 copies of her original song through our own website, to which she received $1 per song. And recently we did featured performances for a multitude of brands, BMW, Perrier. She did the pre-Emmy party for the Emmys. She's done a pre-party and after-party for the Oscars. And a lot of that has come from the one thing that we both focused on was identifying a story. And I think obviously she's gifted, she's talented, and she has great music. But we needed to build a story to hook all of this music to it. And the story is what we market, and the story is what we get people excited about. And the music just happens to also be great, which is why the brands and the various partnerships that have come together support her 100%.
Right. You need a stellar product. You know, it's like you can't, you know, no matter how good your marketing strategy is, if you don't have an amazing product, it's just not going to, it's not going to fly. I'm wondering if you, I know we're running short on time, but I was wondering if you could just share some, you know, one sort of creative marketing campaign that you and Chloe came up with, something that was definitely kind of out of the box and sort of off the beaten path that, you know, gave you a successful exposure, experience, et cetera.
Absolutely. Well, I guess I would say that I think that the out-of-the-box idea that we developed was simply that we had built a relationship with a pharmaceutical company, and she had written a brand new song called Be Brave. And Be Brave was a song about the fact that sometimes in life you encounter challenges and hurdles and you may feel beaten down, but at the end of the day, it takes a tremendous amount of courage to face those challenges. And it requires, of course, bravery. And so she'd written this really beautiful song that really came from the heart. And we approached one of the pharmaceutical companies, and we had a presentation that shared what music does to the brain in kind of aiding in therapeutic treatment, psychosomatic treatments, I would call it. And so we were discussing the fact that this company had an interest in not only providing therapeutic treatment to their clients in the form of medicine, but they were also very committed to the idea of offering their clients something that would make them feel great and something that would inspire them and something that would get them committed to continuing to, if you will, fight their battle. And so the idea that we presented was that what if we included a code within what it would be a pill bottle, whatever your medicine bottle, a prescription, you know, bottle where your pills are kept. And in this little bottle would be a code that they could go to a website, download themselves. And they loved it. And what we did was we put a little package together where Chloe wrote a personal letter speaking to these individuals. And the pharmaceutical company decided to actually change the color of the envelope and put a picture of Chloe on top of it with a with a note saying that there was a gift inside. And we were able to successfully structure a deal where they bought one song for a dollar. And we ended up, you know, doing 100,000 songs. So that was, you know, a way for us to be able to reach an entire community of people through the gift of an organization that found the value in the story that we were telling and, of course, loved the song that was being used to connect with their clients.
That's phenomenal. And the other thing is, too, obviously, is how innovative, you know, how incredibly innovative to, I mean, you know, what musician would think of a pharmaceutical company or, you know what I mean? Like, that is so kind of off the beaten path and left field. You know, I think a lot of what happens is, you know, sometimes musicians just, we get like sheep, you know, we just sort of like follow the same trajectory as everybody else. And you're just in this huge, you know, competitive field. And it's like, why do we all have to stay on this one field? You know, there's other markets, there's other areas that, you know, we could actually expand our reach, expand our brand, bring music to, you know, that needs it and wants it, you know, so that's so great, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, listen, I mean, I think at the end of the day, the truth of the matter is, you know, I'm not able to compete with Sony. It's just not possible. You know, Sony has way too many resources. So I think that the goal for us was to identify and discover, you know, a distribution mechanism that no one was really paying attention to. And so that, like I said, is what we came up with. And I'm sure that there's all kinds of distribution options and pipelines that people can explore if they're if they're creative enough.
That's great. That's so great. Just to wrap up, is there anything you want to share about in terms of future projects or things in the pipeline with you and Chloe that you wanted to share?
Sure. I mean, I guess I would say, you know, Chloe and I are about to launch a new campaign that is called Be Phenomenal. So we're putting together all kinds of collateral content that we can use during the game. So, you know, that's something we're extremely excited about because obviously it allows her to communicate with her audience by providing them fresh, original content, and more importantly, a powerful message that she believes in 100%. So that's something that we're working on. And independent of that, I'm working with Citibank to create an entire campaign around the culinary industry. And, of course, you know, when I think of food, I think of music. So I've tied music and food together, and I've called this concept sound bites. So sound bites
is
something
good.
That
I love that.
Yeah, so that's something I'm doing for I'm working in partnership with the Grammys, and I'm building it for the campaign of for Citibank. So those are, I guess, what I would say are two areas that I'm currently working on and excited about building this year.
That's fantastic. Well, I would ask what tips or suggestions, but you know what? People just need to listen to the entire podcast, because this podcast is completely chock full of tips and suggestions and great insight about your field, your area of expertise, and also, you know, how to market yourself as a musician, especially in this new landscape, you know, this whole new world of DIY musicians and music and playing field. So I want to thank you again so much. This has just been such a great talk, and I've learned so much, and I hope maybe down the line we'll get to talk again.
Well, listen, thank you again for having me. I really appreciate it. I do hope what I shared is helpful to your listeners, and we'll speak again, and thank you again for reaching out. Have a beautiful rest of your day, Claire.
Well, I think that went pretty well for a first interview. No, I got to give all the credit to Marvin. What a great guy and what an amazing story. Again, check out Chloe Temchin's website, her music, follow her on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all that good stuff. Her website is CHLOETEMTCHINE.com. Again, I am your host, L. Ariel. You can check me out and my musical wanderings at LARIELmusic.com. And again, our podcast website is musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. Join us again this time next week. Please subscribe, please share, please tell your friends, and most of all, keep on hustling, pursue that dream. Don't give up.